10, this is VOA News. I'm Lori London reporting. The leaders of Britain, France, Germany, and the U.S. now have jointly condemned the poisoning of a former Russian spy on British soil that has been blamed on Moscow, calling it the first offensive use of a nerve agent in Europe since the Second World War. A joint statement issued Thursday by Prime Minister Theresa May, President Emmanuel Macron, Chancellor Angela Merkel, and President Trump said there was no plausible alternative explanation to Russia's involvement in the attack. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders at Thursday's press briefing also defended the Trump administration's efforts to deal with Russia.
The president has also shown that he's been extremely tough on Russia throughout his administration. And I think particularly you saw that today in the Russia sanctions that were put forward.
Russia has denied any involvement. Former spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia were found unconscious on a park bench in the English town of Salisbury and rushed to the hospital where they remain in serious condition. Several other individuals, including a police officer, were sickened. Prime Minister May announced a series of reprisals against Russia over the poisoning, including the expulsion of 23 Russian diplomats. It will be the largest expulsion of Russian diplomats since 1971, at the height of the Cold War. And a just-built pedestrian bridge across a busy Miami, Florida highway collapsed Thursday, crushing a number of cars at the site between the campus of Florida International University and student housing. Several cranes and police dogs have been part of the rescue effort. Police say four bodies were found in the wreckage, with at least eight others taken to the hospital. This is VOA. U.S. lawmakers on both parties in the U.S. welcome new sanctions on Russian entities and individuals involved in cyber attacks against the United States. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman reports.
Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy suggested the sanctions are a welcome break from the Trump White House turning a blind eye to Russian meddling.
Oh, it's way overdue. I mean, this administration has gone out of their way to ignore all the attacks that Russia has made on us. Our intelligence services have made it very clear they try to alter our elections, and there's no question they'll try it again.
The sanctions penalize Russian hackers, cyber trolls, and spy agencies by freezing assets and prohibiting Americans from doing business with them.
That's VOA's Michael Bowman reporting. The United States is demanding the world hold Syria's government, Russia, and Iran responsible for what a top official calls some of the worst atrocities known to man. The statement by U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster came Thursday during an event at the U.S. Holocaust Museum in Washington, marking the seventh anniversary of the start of the Syrian conflict.
And if we need a reminding of the importance of acting now, we need not look any further than this museum's powerful exhibits and resources on the Syrian conflict.
McMaster also accused Russia and Iran of enabling Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and said that they, too, must be held accountable. North Korea's foreign ministers in Sweden on a mission that could set the stage for a possible summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. But State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert told reporters Thursday there is no let-up of maximum pressure on North Korea.
North Korea has posed a grave threat, not just to the region, but also to the world. This administration designed its maximum pressure campaign more than a year ago. We are advancing and continuing to push that maximum pressure campaign.
President Trump unexpectedly announced last week that he will meet face-to-face with Kim Jong-un by the end of May, but a date and a location have not yet been announced. A German Shepherd that United Airlines mistakenly shipped to Japan was heading home to Kansas Thursday, even as the carrier was still grappling with the fallout over the death of a puppy on a separate United Airlines flight this week. United's treatment of animals was questioned earlier this week when a French bulldog pup in a carrying case died after a flight attendant insisted that the dog's owner put the animal in the overhead storage for the 3.5-hour flight. I'm Lori London, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today's Friday, March 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe says his removal from office was a coup d'etat and that his successor is an illegal president.
He could never have assumed the presidency of the country without the army. The army made sure that the other organs of state were neutralized, completely neutralized.
The mandate of the UN mission in South Sudan has been renewed for another year. Togolese diaspora in New York will march this weekend to call international attention to the ongoing Togolese political crisis. And Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission prepares for a presidential runoff poll scheduled for March 27th.
We hope to train our staff more, give them better training to ensure that some of the anomalies, the mistakes that some of these staff were involved in during the process, if we are able to improve in such, it will go a long way to help the process.
Albert Masekwa is the spokesman for the National Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone, and another albino person is missing in southern Malawi as attacks on the group continues. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe said his removal from office was a coup d'etat and that his successor, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is an illegal president. Mr. Mugabe, who was forced by the military to resign last November, broke his silence on Thursday when he invited a select group of journalists to his residence to air his grievances. He said his removal was a military takeover and that Emmerson Mnangagwa, whom he said he brought into the government and nurtured, had betrayed him.
On my side, I always had Emmerson Mnangagwa. I brought him in to government, but I never thought he whom I had nurtured and brought into government and whose life I had worked so hard in prison to save as he was threatened with hanging, that one day he would be the man who would turn against me. But there it was, there it is. It happened on the 15th of November. He was assisted by the army. I said, it was a coup d'etat. Some people have refused to call it a coup d'etat. And what happened? He could never have assumed the presidency of the country without the army. It's the army which assisted him. The army made sure that the other organs of state were neutralized, completely neutralized.
Mr. Mugabe said he doesn't hate President Mnangagwa, but he said an illegal government has been imposed on Zimbabwe. He says he's willing to help the country return to the constitution. Unfortunately, Mr. Mugabe said he's being isolated.
I don't hate Emmerson. I brought him into government. I would want to work with him. But he must be proper. He is improper where he is. Illegal. And if it is to correct that illegality that he would want me to discuss with him, I'm willing. We must undo this disgrace which we have imposed on ourselves. We don't deserve it. Please, we don't deserve it. Zimbabwe doesn't deserve it. We want to be a constitutional country. Yes, we may have our shortcomings here and there, but overall, we must obey the law, become constitutional. People must be chosen to be in government in the proper way. I'm willing to discuss. I'm willing to assist in that process. But I must be invited, properly invited, for that discussion. Currently, I am isolated.
Mr. Mugabe says Zimbabweans have always prided themselves on being democratic and, as such, must be allowed to choose their leaders, not imposed on them. Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission says it's ready to organize the March 27th presidential runoff vote, where Samura Kamara, the candidate for the ruling All People's Congress Party, the APC, will face former military ruler Julius Maada Bio of the main opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP. None of the two candidates was able to garner the 55% of the vote in the first round, a requirement to win the presidency. Both candidates have stepped up their respective campaigns ahead of the runoff. Albert Masekwai, spokesman for the National Elections Commission of Sierra Leone, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the electoral body is ready to ensure a peaceful, transparent, and credible election.
The commission is on high gear with regard to the issue of preparations, because we are going to run similar type of elections. Only thing is that this time around would have less activity at polling stations, because the previous contest few days ago, we had four different sets of elections. So we are involved with a lot of logistical activities. But now, because we are going into the runoff, we have less staff to man the polling stations and less activities within the polling station. Because of the experience that we have and being a professional organization, we have put everything in place to ensure that we go over the process. And we are going to lay premium again on training and capacity development.
Do you think the Electoral Commission has enough time to prepare for the March 27 presidential election runoff? Because when will the ballot papers be printed? When will they arrive in the country in time for the runoff?
In the first place, the law makes provision for the stipulated time period of 2 weeks. And we have adjusted ourselves as an electoral management body to work within the time frame as stipulated by law. We are still going to print these ballot papers. We're not going to develop any new ballot artwork. We still have the existing one, which originally there had been 16 candidates, but we'll just remove 14 and we still remain with two. So it is a matter of adjusting the ballot artwork that we have been using from 16 candidates to two candidates, and we print it. As I speak, all of such is on the way. We would ensure that we'll be able to print the ballot papers, and they will be in country in time for us to deploy our materials and, of course, start the elections of the runoff in ample time that fits within the legal framework.
Is the Electoral Commission monitoring their respective campaigns, particularly when supporters from opposing sides have accused each other of intimidation, among others?
Yes. Since the next chairman declared campaign periods, we're going to continue in the monitoring aspect. What we did in collaboration with the two political parties, the parties balloted for campaign days. In other words, the country has been split into two. We have the southeastern region and the northwestern region. On every given day, these two political parties are going to concentrate their campaign in either of the regions that we've divided the country into, so that they can have ample time in their campaigning. Ensure we monitor. We don't only do it as the electoral management body, but we've involved civil society organizations, also the political parties and other stakeholders to follow through the process, because the electoral process is owned by all Sierra Leoneans. And because of the experiences that we've had, a good number of Sierra Leoneans and well-meaning organizations have become part and parcel of the process to ensure that all of us, the electoral management body, the political parties, the candidates, the supporters, we all comport ourselves within the legal framework. We would ensure, we hope, that the campaigns would go on peacefully and end peacefully until we are able to conduct the runoff election.
So what assurances will the Electoral Commission give the people of Sierra Leone? Because some people were saying in Freetown that the situation was a little bit tensed. What are some of the measures the Electoral Commission will be implementing to ensure a smooth process in the presidential election runoff?
We hope to train our staff more, give them better training to ensure that some of the anomalies, the mistakes that some of these staff were involved in during the process, if we are able to improve in such, it will go a long way to help the process. We also hope that with the engagement with political parties, it would help that political parties and their agents, they know their do's and don'ts, what is expected of them at polling station level. Because some of these things, it boils down to the issue of ignorance of some of the procedures that the commission has been using in discharging its duties. But would increase the level of engagement. Based upon that, we hope that the Electoral Commission, the political parties, their agents, all of us will be on the same plane so that as we implement the electoral process, they will be able to understand the processes, how we deal with the results management system, how we tally the elections results, and how we announce the elections results. The more they have knowledge about it, the better we all stand to benefit from the process.
Albert Masekwa is the spokesman for the National Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotte from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, the 16th day of March, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Members of the Togolese diaspora will march in New York City this weekend to call on the international community, especially the United Nations, to intervene in what they say are ongoing human rights abuses by the Togolese government. Farida Naburima, director of the Togolese Civil League, tells Ricky Stryak that amid political protests calling on President Fona Simwe to step down, there have also been civil servant strikes met by violent crackdowns by authorities.
So we have health practitioners that have been striking, teachers that have been striking, and this situation has been going on for years. It's not a recent phenomenon, but it has increased in the past couple of months. Almost every other week, the workers are striking in Togo. So in order to dismantle these strikes, which have been weakening the governments, they have decided to attack the leaders of these civil society groups. So they find reasons to arrest them. They arrested medical doctors, university professors, university students, teachers, and this has sparked a series of protests as well in Togo. So these are some of the violations that we are talking about. Other type of violation in the village of Tipi Achadam, who is one of the opposition leaders that started this whole thing back in August, militaries went in there and beat up community members for no reason, just because they are from the village of Tipi Achadam. So these kind of abuses are not getting enough coverage, and this is why they are organizing protests to raise awareness on the situation and to bring attention on these abuses and to hold the government accountable for such atrocities.
And I know there is talk that there are areas in, I believe it is northern Togo, where people are claiming that authorities are killing people. What is the status of these kind of abuses in addition to the arrest and clampdown on teachers?
There is a non-profit organization, human rights organization in Togo, which published a comprehensive report on these abuses that have started since August 2017 in Togo. And it shows that over 100 people have died as a result of these abuses. The government tends to only put attention on those who were killed by gunshot, but there are other people who have died as a result of these abuses. As you have mentioned, in northern cities, because the government always tries to give the impression that they are supported by the North, because the regime in majority is led by people from Kara, which is a northern city. Fona Simwe is from northern Togo. Because of that, they use extreme violence to contain any kind of protest in the North. So they have been sending militaries. We have basically three communities in northern Togo that are under full military control. They have like a martial law there. The Mango, Sokode, Paratau. In these areas, you have full martial law. The militaries control people. There's no freedom of association, no freedom of circulation. People have no right to gather. They see more than five people standing together, they arrest them, especially the males. So young men have been fleeing and with their families, and people are living in the bush. We have hundreds of them living in the bush till today, and they have no protection. They have no support. They live off whatever they can find in the bush.
That was Farida Naburima, director of the Togolese Civil League. She spoke to Ricky Stryak from Freetown, Sierra Leone. The mandate of the United Nations mission in South Sudan was renewed on Thursday for another year. A meeting at the Security Council saw no objection to the resolution. But as Ayen Deng Biol reports, the South Sudanese ambassador at the United Nations took issue with the language of the resolution.
Draft Resolution 2406 was adopted unanimously by the 15-member Security Council, renewing the UNMISS mandate for another year. Joan Nyanyuki, a regional director for Amnesty International, says today's renewal should prompt UN officials to expand protections of the most vulnerable in camps across the country.
If within these protection sites, two things need to happen. There needs to be a real security within these protection sites, so the no access from the outside. We get reports of breaches of the security and entry of gangs and armed groups into the protection sites. So that needs to stop. So there's real strengthening of the physical barriers that ensure that this protection. So that's from external aggression. And then within the site, we need to be sure that there isn't any abuses actually going on by the UN forces themselves.
Resolution 2406 reiterated what it termed as an increasingly great alarm regarding the political, economic, and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, as well as the violence caused by military leaders since the eruption of violence in the country. But South Sudan's deputy permanent representative to the UN, Joseph Moum, who was the only speaker at today's meeting, says the real problem in South Sudan is what he calls the mischaracterization of the conflict in his country.
It would be in ironic double jeopardy to punish a country that is already suffering from an acute crisis. Mr. President, my country position is that punitive action and punishment are counterproductive. The only solution to the conflict in South Sudan is through a political process, of which President Salva Kiir Mayardit has continuously played an active role and made numerous compromises.
But the language in today's adopted resolution asserts that the conflict has spread because the ceasefire agreement signed by both warring parties was never implemented by the government, along with the government's failure to keep its promise of allowing unhindered access for humanitarian assistance. Nyanyuki agrees.
The war in South Sudan really is about the politics of power sharing between government and opposition. And, I mean, a failure of them to agree on how to have an inclusive government that takes into consideration the history of South Sudan as a young nation.
And while UNMISS focuses on protection of civilians, officials should also focus on collecting and preserving evidence of violations, according to Nyanyuki. Today's renewal extends UNMISS's mandate until March 2019. Ayan Dengbuor, VOA News, Washington.
Another albino is missing in southern Malawi as attacks on the group continues. He is a third albino person missing in 3 months. As Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, their disappearances come despite efforts to end the attacks.
21-year-old McDonald White went missing last week in Machinga District in southern Malawi. Davis Sulumba is the police spokesperson in Machinga.
He went out to visit his girlfriend at the trading center, and he didn't mention the exact place he was going to. And he has never come back, and the matter was reported to Serema Police Post by his father.
Sulumba says police have arrested one person in connection with the case. He declined to divulge more information to avoid jeopardizing the investigation. The incident is the latest of the series of attacks on people with albinism over the past 5 years. Police records show that 130 albinos have been attacked since 2013. Boniface Massa is the executive director of Association of People with Albinism in Malawi.
It's a shock to us, looking at the pattern that we have been now registering of people just missing like that. This is not the first case that we have registered in the last 3 months. And if we look at even the numbers of people or attacks that we have registered in Malawi, over 9 people are now missing.
In 2016, a visiting UN representative on people with albinism said an estimated 10,000 albinos face life-threatening danger in Malawi if the government fails to end the attacks. Albino people who lack pigment in their skin are attacked because of false beliefs that their body parts have powers to bring good luck and wealth. The attacks spilled into Malawi from neighboring Tanzania. The Tanzanian government, however, has managed to contain the attacks by banning witch doctors and imposed tough penalties on the culprits. UN Women, the United Nations entity working women's equality, has been working with several Malawi government agencies to help end albino attacks. Habiba Osman is programs specialist at UN Women.
What what we've been doing was for us to go in the community to raise awareness to persons with albinism, but joining up with other institutions to ensure that we are building these community policing mechanisms, for example, so that we could respond to the violations that were taking place at the community level.
She, however, says there is still a long way to go.
That was reporter Lamek Masina reporting from Blantyre. It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the wrap of the second leg fixtures in Africa's prestigious football club competition, the CAF Champions League, scheduled to hold this weekend. Ethiopian flag bearers St. George face a daunting task when they tackle Ugandan giants Kampala City Council Authority in the return leg on Saturday in Kampala. The two sides settled for a barren draw in the first leg last week in Addis Ababa. Mbambane Swallows will hope to consolidate its 2-1 win over Zanaco when they host the Zambians in Swaziland. Elsewhere in Cote d'Ivoire, Wydad Casablanca of Morocco will take a 2-7 goal advantage to Williamsville in Cote d'Ivoire, while CF Monana of Gabon will host Al Ahly of Egypt. Al Ahly defeated the Gabonese side 4-0 in the first leg. On Sunday, ES Satif of Algeria will host Aduana of Ghana, and Yusuf Abubakar, coach of Aduana Stars, is confident his ward will do the job in Algeria.
I will never give up till we finish the second leg. I know what the boys can do, and we have also strategized something. We have a principle, and one of the cardinal principles is that we wouldn't like to concede without scoring.
Other matches slated for this weekend include Plat United of Nigeria, who will be hosting Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia at the Sani Abacha Stadium in Kano. El Hilal of Sudan will host AS Togo of Togo, while ASEC Mimosas will face ZESCO of Zambia. FIFA representative and CAF vice president Philip Chiangwa has confirmed that Ace Nkombo will not stand in the upcoming South Africa Football Association presidential elections after a meeting he held with SAFA ahead of the planned elective congress.
It's a problem that is of interest to all of us. My advice at all material times to all presidents within the COSAFA region is please don't fight with your own people.
Former referee and Premier League Soccer League general manager Ace Nkombo had warned that if FIFA fails to dissolve the SAFA leadership, he will be forced to take football's world governing body to court.
When we deal with the matter of the courts, if we go the route of an interdict, we will be interdicting FIFA, forcing them legally to implement sections G1, G2 and G3, which obligate them to intervene and place an FA under administration.
Now to athletics news. Gold medal winners from Ghana's 72 athlete contingent at the 2018 Commonwealth Games in Australia will receive a $15,000 cash prize. The Deputy Minister of Youth and Sport, Pius Hartzeit, said silver and bronze medal winners will also be adequately rewarded.
The IGC has gotten sponsorship from a philanthropist who has decided to add an extra $10,000 for gold. So in effect, it is $15,000 for gold. But $5,000 is from the government of Ghana, and $10,000 is from an Australian company that has been operating in Ghana for the past 35 years.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, March 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Rex Tillerson's first official visit to Africa was also his last. He was ousted as U.S. Secretary of State just hours after returning to Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump has tapped CIA Chief Mike Pompeo to replace Tillerson as America's top diplomat. Tillerson's trip to Africa focused largely on China's growing influence on the continent. an in-depth discussion on what his abrupt exit means for US-Africa policy on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.